This podcast is sponsored by Pharma Plus, evidence-based nutrition created by pharmacists with over 20 years' experience. They make supplements simple and effective. Check them out at pharmaplus.ie or on Instagram at Pharma Plus Ireland. This podcast begins in a different way this week. What you're about to hear is an email that was sent by a girl, Steph. When she was at her lowest point, she wrote this and sent it to a local radio station, reaching out for help, just hoping someone would listen. These are her words, exactly as she wrote them. As I'm writing this email, I'm sitting in my room, not able to come out to the rest of my family after my mom and dad went away for the first time since I've had this disease. I've suffered for around 10 years with depression and anxiety, and in the past 4 years, severe OCD. I've gone to doctors, psychiatrists, hypnosis, faith healers, reflexology, and cognitive behavioural therapy, but nothing seems to work. I've been through traumas in my life, and I know there's a trigger, and I'm on medication for this, but I just want it to stop. I have a great family, but I can't help think, if something happens to my mom or dad, how will I cope with that? How will I manage life without them? By them being away today and staying away tonight, I realised I can't. I'm basically confined to my room with no one allowed in. I go to the toilet, and because no one has cleaned the kitchen and sanitised it, I'm unable to go out there. I sanitise from head to toe every night, my face, my hair, everything, after spending an hour or so in the shower. I can't take my own food or drinks or even tea. I change my clothes 5 times a day and my pyjamas are on 4 times before going to bed. If I don't have a shower before bed, I stay up all night long until the next morning when my anxiety eases, only to start again the next day. I have no life. My sister and I were so close, and now I can't even sit at the same table with her. It breaks my heart, and I know it breaks theirs too. My mom and dad are in their 60s, and they should be living life now that their kids are raised. Instead, they're constantly worried about me. I need more help, and I can't seem to find it. It's not even about germs anymore. It's the fear of other people's dirt getting on me and feeling right. Please, if someone could help, I'd appreciate it. And please, I prefer to remain anonymous. This was Steph back then, a young woman trapped in her own thoughts, desperate for a way out. But today she's sitting right here with me, and what she's managed to come back from, well, it's nothing short of extraordinary. This is the comeback, and this is Steph's story. Steph Doyle, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Brenda, how are you?
Fellow Duhallow lady.
Yeah, right beside the Duhallow Kennels in Liscarlie, yeah.
That's where the Donkey Sanctuary is as well.
Donkey Sanctuary is, yeah. People are more familiar with the Donkey Sanctuary.
love it. Your story, Steph, I mean, I was reading an email about it and it's something that I haven't covered yet in the podcast. When I was reading, I was like, this is something I really, really want to do. It's you're recovering from extreme OCD.
Yeah.
And we were chatting there before we started recording and obviously people might say, oh, that's my OCD. It's my OCD.
Yeah.
Like you're going to cover what OCD did to you. Like it ruined your life in ways.
Yeah. It was debilitating. That's what it was. Confined to my room. It took my independence totally.
And you said there as well that you grieved the old Steph.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. I think a lot of my family did, to be quite honest with you. That's what they did.
Well, we'll get to that anyway, soon anyway. We're having a great chat. You're a lovely, lovely person. Grew up in Liscarlie. Can you just tell me what it was like for you and where you went to school and all that?
So anybody in Liscarlie would know that we're not GAA people, anything like that. And I did play football for a while when I was younger. Loved football. But the horses, we have a yard of horses at home. My brother's full-time at home. They took over. That's what they did. So we're outside in the country in the Scarlet Cantork Road. That's what we are. Went to school. Wouldn't say I hated school. Wouldn't say I liked it. Wouldn't say I disliked it. I got on with it, basically. Went into school, had my little 2-3 friends inside in school, very quiet person, got on with my work, went to Kenturk, into the convent in Kenturk for my secondary school, same thing. Went in, got on with it, didn't really say much in school, was very quiet. Then when I left school, I went to college in CIT, did graphic design in CIT, visual communications, loved it. Exactly the same thing, got on the bus, I got on the train, on the bus and out to CIT, did my whole thing, came back in, went home, and that was it. Very quiet, down to earth, I would say, person, I'd like to think anyway. Yeah, so as I said, I was very quiet in myself until I got a job then after college. It took a few years because graphic design, they got rid of the work placement in because people were only going out giving coffees. They weren't allowed design basically, which is understandable. Then I did a bit of volunteer work and then I got a job inside in Mallow, in a print shop inside in Mallow. Absolutely loved it. That's what I did. And that's when I started to come out of myself because when customers would come in, I'd talk to them, make conversation. Some people used to actually come down. There was one old lady, that's what she used to come down and she was coming in. She didn't buy anything. She didn't want anything, literally just for the chat. And when I left Mallow, she was like, it's funny because she was always somebody that I wanted to reach out to because I loved our chats and everything like that. And she'd be telling me her story and I'd be talking. No, I hadn't extreme OCD at the time. Was washing my hands, but nothing. Like I was working, I had independence. But yeah, I kind of missed that. And I loved engaging with people and be nice to people. They used to go out with a smile on their face and that made me feel happy.
So lovely, yeah.
Yeah. And then Lorraine, my sister, she'd laugh at it. We'd go in at Christmas and the place could be packed. The shop could be packed. And I know what it's like from the opposite side. I'd be there and I'd be asking him, oh, are you busy today? And Lorraine would be like, as if the place is packed, you just look around. But I do it just to make a conversation because I'm like, people are probably just coming up and they're such in a rush today. Just say Christmas time and everything, everybody is busy and they could probably have something on their mind. And I'm like, they mightn't have a conversation all day, and they might want it, even if it's the most ridiculous conversation ever. But I'd be listening, my sister should be there and she's like, Seth, will you just read a room? The place is packed. So that kind of thing. That's when I started coming out for myself. And now, as I said, I'd probably talk for Ireland now. That's what I would.
But those people you're saying about that elderly lady, you probably made her day.
Yeah. To me, she felt... she came across as a very lonely, she went through a lot herself and she came to me that she was a very lonely lady and I loved seeing her come in and if I could, I'd always say, I wanted to stay in contact. I had no way of getting in contact with her. If I could at all, I would have loved to stay in contact with her because I'd have loved for her, to be making her day every day.
Yeah.
Do you know that kind of way?
So kind. Do you know she's alive?
I don't know. I would look up the rep.ie every now and again. Yeah.
Which is what we would do.
Yeah, just to see. I didn't know her second name. I knew where she was from. I knew she was staying in Mallow, but she was from a different area. I would look up, as I said, her name and I'd know her picture and everything. And as I said, she was such a nice lady, such a quiet lady. She used to actually come in and there could be 2 or 3 people on the till. And next thing she'd come in and she'd be like, is Steph there? And I could be in the middle of a job, and I'd be like, not to drop everything for her. That kind of way. Steph,
that's lovely.
It's not I know it wasn't my business, but at the end of the day, I was like, I just wanted to make her day And she went out smiling. That's made me happy.
And that kindness, she'll remember that for us for life.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to help her make phone calls and everything like that. She wasn't able to use the phone. She wasn't able to ring a taxi and everything. And I was like, it was lovely. The creator, she probably came down during COVID, the place, we all were in lockdown. I was like, she came down and when she came down, I was gone. When it opened back up. Now, I didn't go back to work because that's when my OCD kicked in as well. But I didn't go back to work. But I was like, that always kills me.
Yeah.
I'm like, that poor lady, she came out and now she's probably left. No, she's such a nice lady. She probably met somebody else along the way. But I was like, that kills me in thinking that she came down one day and she asked for Steph and they had to say, Steph's not working here anymore.
Oh, I feel like going finding her now.
Yeah.
Oh, it's something we might do. We might try and do it.
Okay.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, as I said, I hope she's alive.
Yeah.
She's, But as I said, I do, the lads will laugh at this if they hear it. Like, you know, they'll be like, safe because I'm always the RAP.ie because I hate hearing bad news or anything like that. And like that, I always check to make sure, like, I was like, okay, she's still alive anyway. That's the main thing.
You're so kind. And then, like, I'm listening to you there now after, and I'm like, everything that you've been through and then the kindness out of you.
Yeah.
So good of you. Well, you said you left, you ended up leaving. Was that because the shop was closed during COVID or what was the situation?
So the shop closed down for COVID, but then it started to reopen. So I wanted to go back in, but I couldn't go back in because I don't think I could deal with the volume of people. That was when my OCD started kicking in, started kicking off basically. I did have my OCD working in there. But I kind of pushed it aside because I was like, you know, people were coming in, they were happy or whatever. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the job. I loved the job. It was what I wanted to do was graphic design. I loved the job. But yeah, then it shut down. Then I was like, I wasn't able to go back to work. And I kept saying, oh no, can you give me another few weeks? Can you give me another few weeks? And then at the end, I was like, no. The place has since shut down. It opened in another area. I don't know if it's still opened or not, to be honest. Then I kind of focused on myself because my mental health kind of took over then. And then I switched careers completely and went to childcare.
Do you know when you were saying there in the shop as well, your OCD was starting to creep in? Was that washing the hands at the time? Or?
Yeah, yeah. I actually remember being out on a Christmas night out. So I used to wash my hands all the time. I'm always conscious that people will caught me doing stuff. Do you know that? Even though I don't tell them, I'm like, they're going to say, geez, why is she over there still washing her hands? Like, do you know that kind of a way? He never mentioned it to me, but on a night out, he made a comment before, not maliciously or anything like that. He just said something and he was like, sure, if you're looking for safe, kind of, she's upstairs washing her hands. Nothing, not bad intended or anything like that. It was, and then I'm like, he notices. And that always stuck with me, like, money, handling money, I can't to this day handle money, like, you know, handling money is a big thing because I'm thinking of how many people touched it. Do you know, I had to do that in the shop. I was like, I can't wear gloves. If I wear gloves, I was like, people would look at me to know what's wrong with the one inside here. Now I know after COVID, you could, do you know, that kind of a way. And I know people inside in some shops, do you know, that are cashiers, they will wear gloves. I don't overthink it at all.
And you know, when they were giving you the money, did you have to go wash your hands every single time after?
Yeah, I take the money. So we were in an old place. We were in the premises that we were beforehand. It was only out the back. I used to have to go wash my hands. We had a little area out the back. So I used to go out there, wash my hands, come back in, and I was fine again. But then we moved places and you had to go up a flight, two flights of stairs. So it wasn't as accessible, I would say, which, yeah, it started to get tough at that stage. That was when I'm like, oh, if somebody comes in and I'm not down here, and then I could be just gone up, washing my hands and come down again, and then I'd have to use it again. Do you know what?
It's been exhausted.
It was exhausting. It was absolutely draining. That's what it was. But I didn't want, nobody knew at that time. Oh, my family did, but nobody, I didn't want anybody to know. I didn't want, I don't think, if he knew at the time, he wouldn't have taught me differently. He'd have taught me the exact same and all this. But I didn't want him to look at me differently and say, you know, have kind of, I wouldn't say pity on me, but I didn't want it to hold me back from doing something I really loved. Do you know, that kind of a way. And if there was a job that he wanted me to do, I didn't want him to feel, oh, Steph can't do that because, you know, she'll have to wash her hands 100 times. Do you know, that kind of way. I didn't want it to stop me of doing things I loved. But eventually it did. It caught up with me.
And how long would you have been washing your hands?
Oh, I could wash my hands for 15 to 20 minutes. I washed my hands until they bled. And if they weren't bleeding or if they weren't sore, my hands weren't clean, basically. I used to love seeing, like, now back then when I think of it, I used to love seeing, you know, that old kind of the skin coming off your hands. I used to love seeing that peel off because I'm like, whatever dirt was on me, it's after peeling away. Now that's what it is. But as I said, if it wasn't stinging, if it wasn't burning, it wasn't working, basically.
And then, you know, when you're after doing that and you'd come back down, would your hands not still be kind of red with blood?
They would. I remember, actually, we have good friends, so into the horses. I remember being at a show one day and I'd come up to the office. They'll know exactly who I'm talking about. Like, I'd come up to the office, and myself and my sister would come up and we'd have a chat with them. And I remember the girl inside and she'd said to me, she'd be like, stiff. She said, what's wrong with your hands? Like, they're bleeding, like, you know? And then I was like, oh no, I said, and it was kind of October, this kind of time. And I'm like, oh no, I said, you know what that is now? I said, it's the hot water. And I said, my hands are so cold. I said, it's just after cracking my hands. I said, that's all that is. I think I told her, I'm nearly certain I told her after, like, she knows obviously now about the OCD. And I think I remember telling her about that day. And she kind of said, Steph, I knew that.
Aww.
And I'm like, all right, okay. Because she said, no way. Because she said, no matter how cold your hands were, no way could hot water do that to your hands. This was something that was kind of going on for a long time. There were knuckles. My knuckles were bleeding, everything. As I said, I wouldn't say I can't remember the pain of them, but I hid the pain of them because I was like, I don't really care. Like, I used to put sanitizer on top of that thing on the cuts. So you know what sanitizer, salt or anything is like on top of a cut. Yeah, as I said, I use dollop sanitizer then on top of it and rub it in, and the more it stung, the more I'm like, I'm clean.
And then when you're at home, was it a secret where you had to do it in the bathroom with the door locked? You wouldn't be...
No, it actually wasn't, because from the start, when it started to creep in, my sister and my mother were quick to cop it. So it wasn't something that I hid at home. I was comfortable at home. You know, they never looked at me. They never looked at me any differently. You know, they were going to accept me no matter what I was. They were going to accept me, you know, that kind of way. So I think I was more afraid on the outside that people wouldn't accept me for the way I am, you know, basically. Whereas at home, it was tough on them, very tough on them, but they accepted me no matter what. So I never hid it. I didn't like it because I knew it was hurting them, but I never hid it in them, you know. I couldn't hide it in them anyway. They're too clued into me. That's what they are.
Yeah.
They know me too well. Like, my sister knows me better than I know myself, basically. She knows the minute that something's wrong, she's always there. All my family are always there, and I'm very lucky that way.
Then when you moved on, then did your anxiety and depression start to creep in, we'll say, when you started the new job in the preschool?
No, my anxiety and depression started way back in 2010.
Right, okay.
So I lost my nana. My nana was my best friend. Everybody that knows me knows my nana was my best friend. She was at home with us. She was over every day. She was everything. That's what she was. Never experienced it. I was 15. She started to live with us then. Myself and my sister and my mum, we took care of her. The boys did as well. But as I said, you know, she's a lady. She didn't want the boys taking care of her, you know, taking her to the toilet and all that. We did that. We gave up our room. Myself and my sister, you share a room. We gave up our room. We used to sleep in the sitting room, and we used to take turns every night. You know, she'd be up going to the toilet. She ended up getting cancer. So she didn't know. She could have been straight up from the toilet and she'd be roaring to go back down again because she didn't know any different, like, you know. But if you even heard her story, she was the strongest lady I know. She's unbelievable. And yeah, my mum is taking after her.
Oh, what was your grandmother's name?
Mary Curtin. She actually was from Newmarket. That's what she was. But yeah, as I said, she was the best.
Oh my gosh. And you were so sad after with the grief, you just went low.
I didn't know how to deal with it. I blamed myself for a lot of it.
And why would you blame yourself?
So I knew, I sound vain now, that's what I do, but I knew I was her favourite. Do you know that kind of way?
Valid, very valid.
Do you know, now she'll say, and like everyone, they'll say, oh, we don't have favourites, do you know, but I knew that, maybe I just wanted to think it anyway, do you know, that kind of way. And then when she passed, she called out all her names, and they were ready to let her go. I wasn't ready to let her go. And then I was like, she's not going to call mine. And then Mam came over to me and Mam was like, if you're going to have to let her go. And that's when I let her go. And then I'm like, why did I let her go? But she was going to go anyway. Do you know that kind of a way? But yeah, for a long time after, I couldn't accept that I let her go. I blamed myself for letting her go. Do you know? And I was like, Mam was like, Steph, she called your name last for a reason, because you're the only one that's not accepting it yet. And yeah, as I said, I let her go, but I was 15 at the time. And then I regretted all the fights that we had, all the times that I said, Nana, you're only up from the toilet. You're not going back down to the toilet again. Do you know that kind of a thinking of myself, basically, and not Nana, like, you know. I know I was a child still, but it took me a long time to figure out that I started worrying then about my family. Not Timmy and Lorraine and Mark. Didn't worry about them. Worried about my mum and dad, because I'm like, oh, this is grief now. They're, you know, getting older. I'm like, this could be them next. You know, I kind of looked at it as in, the older people go first, then the younger, or then my mum and dad, and then not, I wouldn't say not realizing, but I didn't want to accept that the fact that it could happen to any of them, you know. It was probably the toughest. No, I wouldn't say the toughest. As you'll know soon about my aunt. Yeah, it was a tough time because I think it was because I was so young and I didn't have the understanding of everything. My mum was unbelievable because she was going through such a hard time and she was there all the time. All the lads were, that's what they were. But as I said, mum was always there, even though it was very tough for her.
Your feelings are so valid as well. At that age, you're just not used to anyone that close to you dying.
No.
And your first experience of it then is...
My first experience, technically, I'm like, I lost my best friend from my first date.
Yeah.
Do you know that kind of a way? No, if it happened to any of the lads, like, as I said, I don't know how I'll cope. But it would still probably affect me the very same way.
Of course.
Do you know?
And do you forgive yourself now?
I forgive myself now, yeah. Good. Do I forget... Forget that day? No. Do I forget anything? No, but I do forgive myself. I think I had to forgive myself because at the end of the day, it was going to happen. In some way, I kind of feel peace knowing that she wouldn't go unless I let her go. And then when I let her go, she passed. You know, it kind of gives me peace, but it also, yeah, I would say I forgive myself. Yeah.
Good. There was dark days after that, obviously. And then... That led up to working. Were you going through? You were in college a couple of years after that, and then what were those years leading up to college?
They were my anxiety and my depression was really tough at that stage. My mum and my sister, they were like, "Steph, will you please seek help? Will you please seek help?" I was like, "No, I don't want anybody to know this." Like, you know, I was like, "They'll think I'm mad or whatever." And then I was like, "No." I said, "I'm not going seeking help." I said, "I'm fine." I said, "I'll get through it." The days I used to put on a front, I used to go on nights out, I used to put on a front. I'd be like, you'd swear I was the happiest person in the room. That's what you would. But yet going to college, nobody would have known going to college. I wouldn't think, as I said, I was quiet, didn't make a lot of friends in college. I used to, like, as I said, I'd spend lunchtime on my own. I was kind of embarrassed by that. But at the end of the day, I don't even know how I really explain that. I don't like eating on my own, because I wouldn't like to see another person eating on their own, because I'd feel sorry for him. Yeah. Basically, my brother, I have a younger brother, he's so laid back, he'd go out and he'd eat in any restaurant on his own and he'd be as happy as Larry, you know, and any of my siblings would, I think. But I didn't like that, and I'm like, if I'm in college now, people, if they know me or even if they don't know me, they're going to look over and says, look at her, she's eating on her own, like, you know, like, has she no friends, you know, that kind of a way. And I didn't like that. But I think that was half, I think the reason why I didn't make friends are that I didn't, do you know, come out of myself in college, was the fact I was still grieving my nana.
Yeah. Do you know what you said there was, you pretended to be okay. Robin Williams is like, people fake being okay, but they don't fake being depressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very true what you were going through.
Yeah.
And obviously you graduated college and all that. So, and then we're going up to what we're saying there, but moving on to the preschool, obviously you still have a bit of anxiety and depression. And then...
Yeah, so I didn't, I actually, funny enough, I didn't start the preschool until 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so when I mean, you just mentioned the graduation day. So my graduation day, there's three things that I always wanted. Graduation, my wedding day, and have my own kids or whatever. Graduation day, I couldn't wait for it. Like, but what was going through my head, I started getting these intrusive thoughts. They're called pure OCD intrusive thoughts. They're an obsessional thought still. Didn't know what they were. They started at the end of college. I say my final year of college, I used to be going around and I'm like, oh my God, what happens if I hurt this person? What happens if I hurt that person? I hated myself. I absolutely was like, I'm the worst person in life. I felt evil, right? That's what I did, because I'm like, I'm not one of those that want to hurt my family. But what I was thinking, I wasn't going out deliberately to hurt my family. I was saying, what happens if I, unknowns to me, you know, my brain took over or whatever. You know, they always say that there's a fine line between sanity and insanity. I was afraid that that switch would go and that I'd hurt my family. And it was my family. I don't know why. No, sorry, I do know why, because my counsellor has since told it to me, because she was the first one I ever told about it. My mum was in the counselling session when she heard it as well. And that was the first time anybody knew about it, because when she started talking about intrusive thoughts and OCD and the way it can target you, that was like when I clicked and I'm like, oh, I'm not mad. I was like, people do go through this, you know, that kind of a way. Yeah, I was afraid to go to sleep. I was afraid to do anything. And I can remember my graduation day. That was the worst day of my life because I can't even remember going up to collect my scroll. I can barely remember photographs because all I was worried was, I'm like, I have to stay in control. I have to stay in control that I won't hurt my family. They wanted me to know, did I want to go out for dinner? I was like, no, I want to go home. I said, we actually stopped in Supermax on the way home. That was my graduation. Not because my family didn't want to celebrate or I didn't want to celebrate. I wanted to go home and I wanted to isolate myself so I wouldn't hurt my family. I wanted to stay in control. Do you know, that kind of way, everything had to be in control.
And was there something leading up to this? You were going through the OCD at the time?
Yeah.
Was there something leading up that, did it just come on all of a sudden?
It just came on all of a sudden and slowly started to creep in. I can't actually pinpoint what was the trigger or anything like that. No, do you know CSI, all them crime scenes? I hate them gruesome things anyway. I was kind of looking at them and I don't know, did some of that set it off? Like I was looking at the TV and I'm like, oh, geez, like if I did that to my family. Do you know, that kind of, no intention of doing it. Mm-hmm. But I was like that, as I said, I used to stay awake at night because I'm like, I have to stay in control because if I sleepwalk, if I do anything, I don't know like what I'm going to do. Now, I've no, as I said, no intention of doing anything, but I hated it. But graduation day was, it was like a light switch because it was like OCD didn't win. Because as I said, it's an obsessional thought. OCD didn't win that day. So it switched. And that's when it started to come into the cleaning.
Do you know when you, the harming your family, was it physically harming them?
Physically harming them, yeah. I was afraid I'd kill them, like. I have no idea how I'd even go about it, right? To be honest with you, it's something I never think about.
And they were aware of it?
They weren't aware of it, no.
They weren't aware? No, were you afraid to tell them?
I was afraid to tell them because I was afraid that they'd think I'm an awful person. Never told anybody until 2 years ago because I thought I'd be an awful person. And then when I said, I knew then listening to my counsellor when she was talking about these different ways OCD can target you and different people that have OCD, you know, like it's not always hygiene, it can be just right OCD, it can be intrusive thoughts, it can be all these sort of things. And then I'm like, can I tell you something? I was like, a couple of years ago, I said I went through a thing and I said I never told anybody about it. And then I opened up to her about it. And she said, that's what you had. She said, say if you had pure OCD, she said it was an intrusive thought in your head. And she said it didn't target you. That was your main thing graduation day because it was something that you looked forward to. It was the most important thing to you at the time. Family are the most important thing to you. College, your graduation day was something that you really wanted. And then it didn't win that day. So it decided, right, I'm going to target you on something else. And it always targets something that's so important to you. And that's why you targeted family.
You look back at that day really sad.
I do, because I wish I celebrated it better. And I wish I was able to enjoy it more with my family because it was such, I hate college. I didn't hate college. I hated, I'm a pure home bird. I love family. I hated being away from my family for so long. I was in college from 8 until 6 some evenings. And then by the time I got home with the train and everything, it was probably 8 o'clock, you know, and I didn't like being away from my family. It was my first time. I had to do things on my own, basically. You know, my mum would do loads of things for me. This day, the lads still do loads of things for me. Like, but it was the first time I had to do something on my own. And I think I had to stand up on my own 2 feet, like, you know, and I think that was just tough. It was, people have been doing it since they were kids, like, you know, but I didn't have to. And it was the first time my brother was older than me. So school, everything, he was in school first. So I knew what I was expecting. He was in secondary school first. I knew what I was expecting. He didn't go to college. He, love of horses took over. So I was like, this is the first thing I have to do on my own. I don't know what to experience here. And it was the first thing, as I said. And it was something that I really pushed myself to do. I wanted to drop out after 2 weeks because my anxiety, everything took over. And then my mum and dad said, look, Steph, we'll come up to you every Wednesday, like, at 4 o'clock, just for lunchtime. And then I was like, no, you can't be doing all that travelling, like, you know, that kind of a thing. And then I was like, no. And then I was like, I'm going to do this. And I did it. I did it for 4 years.
That's
and
brilliant.
I'm delighted I did it.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Some people, they might be like, well, you were only up in college. It was a massive deal to you.
It was massive, yeah.
Huge deal. Like was it like an ordeal getting up every morning, even going?
Yeah, yeah.
Would you be panicking, kind of anxious about it?
Yeah, to this day, like, even if I see the train, I haven't gone on a train since or a bus since. Like, no, I don't think my OCD would allow me, like, you know, but I haven't, but even if I see the train, I'm like, oh, the poor people, like going, leaving their families and going up into college. People love college, right?
Yeah.
And it's so, it is good crack, like, and everything. And I'm like, here I am hating it because I'm like, when I came up, I think at the first year, the days were so long. I was 8 in the morning, so I'd have to get up at 6, get the train up to college. Then I'd leave at 6. By the time I came home, it was 8 o'clock. So it was literally just sleep and up again. And I think that's what, whereas the second and third year and the fourth year, yeah, it all kinds of to sizzle out, you know, and I didn't put as much pressure on myself for it. I think back, sitting on the bus, sitting beside people and everything gives me the height of anxiety, you know, yeah, my OCD. But I do hope sometimes I'll be able to do it again. I hope I'd be able to go on a train again and all this. Not worried about it. I don't need it. I didn't drive at the time. I got my driving license 2 years ago.
And which is brilliant. And you drove here today.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 years ago. Anxiety held me back from that.
God, you've been through so much. Moving on from the preschool, I know there was, you were in the preschool and yeah, I know things, yeah, your aunt got ill then.
Yeah. So my aunt got sick. She got Alzheimer's. We think that it was happening from my Nana, from since 2010, since Nana, because she wasn't able, she's our second mother, she was everything to us. So it started in because she wasn't able to take full care of my Nana. So then we kind of knew that she was forgetting stuff, her driving was after deteriorating, all this. And next thing we were like, there's something not right. Little did we know, she kind of knew it herself. And then we begged her one day to go to the doctor and she broke down. She was like, I don't want to because I know what they're going to tell me. She got Alzheimer's. She was still working. She was so independent. She didn't, it was a job trying to get her off the road because she knew it was taking her independence. Something, even up to her last days, something inside me, like you could tell that she was inside there, way, way inside there, but you couldn't just get at her because she, everybody thinks of Alzheimer's differently. I believe that she knew all this was happening to her right up to the end, that this was all happening to her. We lost her that time. I don't know, did we fully grieve her? She wasn't able to look after herself. She wasn't able to look after us, anything. And as I said, she wasn't able to have kids of her own. She was, well, she had an awful life with health-wise. Anything that was going, she got at the crater and she was the best in the world. And yeah, then when the Alzheimer's came, we used to call her Bibi, my cousin Marie. She couldn't say Bridget when she was younger and she kept calling her Bibi, Bibi, Bibi. And then we all called her Bibi. Bibi stuck with her. She was working the donkey sanctuary, actually. That's what she did. She was a veterinary nurse.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, loved donkeys. Wasn't a fan of the horses, even though we had loads of them. She used to come to the shows as well, tried to come to the shows with us.
Yeah.
Wasn't a fan, supported us and everything. But loved the donkeys. That's what she did. But yeah. And then, as I said, she worked right up till her independence basically got taken away from her, and that she couldn't work anymore because, as I said, she was forgetting stuff. Then the hardest day for her, I think, was when she got taken off the road because insurance and everything. That was a very, very tough day for her. I remember her sitting on the bed just bawling her eyes out because I think she gave up that day. I know there's no cure for Alzheimer's or anything, but she fought a good long battle. My mum was unbelievable to her. Unbelievable. If the roles were reversed, she'd have done the exact same. But as I said, what my mum went through was cruel. Do you know, to see her only sister go through that, I couldn't imagine it going through my sister. So yeah, as I said, I think we grieved her that day. Like, she wasn't even photo-wise, if you saw a photo of her. Like, I made a memory book when I was inside in the print shop, and I made a memory book of old pictures of us and her and everything, hoping that she'd remember it. Like, you know, and that I was like, give it to the nurses. She spent a year up in the Mersey. They were unbelievable to her up there. Mam used to go up first thing in the morning, leave last thing at night, never left her side. But she was skin and bone, her face, everything went, all her independence, everything went, her walk, everything. She went into the Mersey, they gave great care of her in the Mersey, but she never walked again. When she went into the Mersey, she never walked again.
Such an awful illness.
It was horrible. You never, do you know, I know you'd be saying, it's like the OCD, people would say, oh, I have OCD. People would often say, oh, do you know, if they forget something, oh, that's the Alzheimer's kicking in early. And people still do say it, and they could say it to me, do you know, or say it to anybody, not maliciously, but I get quite cross with it because I'm like, no, you don't actually know what Alzheimer's is until you go through it.
It's such a lack of awareness.
Yeah.
To just throw it around like that.
Yeah. I'd say when she was 48, she started showing symptoms, and then at 52, she was diagnosed. 51, 52.
What age did she die?
She died at 62.
So she was 10 good years.
Yeah, 61 or 62, I think she was. Yeah, she was still very young when she died. But if you looked at her, you'd think that she's way older than what she was.
And then after she died, how was your mental health after that?
Funnily enough, okay, she died 3 years ago and I was a lot stronger. I was after not coming out of my OCD, but I was able to get out of place. I was able to get out of my room. I was able to get out in public. And then she passed. And I was like, she knew that I wouldn't have been able to do any of this. I put on gloves for the funeral and I shook hands with people. Went into the funeral home. I wouldn't have been able to go to the funeral home. We ate it after, you know, at the afters. I wouldn't have been able to do any of that. People came into our house. People were down, as I said, not just in the kitchen. They were down the hall. They were in the sitting room. They were, you know, catching her hand. I wouldn't have been able to touch her if another person had touched her outside my family, because I wouldn't have been able to say goodbye to her properly, because I'd be like, oh, there are germs around that, on Bibi now. Like, you know, that kind of a way. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been able to do all that. And in a funny way, I do think that she held off until I was ready. Very strange way. I don't know whether it even makes sense to a lot of people, but I do believe that she went when she knew everybody was ready.
That makes perfect sense.
Do you know?
Regarding the gloves at the funeral, like, that's not a bad idea. I know you have to do
yeah,
it,
yeah.
But in general, that's not a bad idea.
It was good, actually, because nobody took any notice of it, because it was in the end of October. Her anniversary is coming up is the 29th of October. So it was cold anyway. So
yeah.
But I had plastic gloves underneath my hand gloves.
I was going to ask, was it a leather glove or the kind of cottony glove?
No, it was cotton. So it was lovely and warm, but I had plastic gloves underneath it. That's what I did.
And then after, was it a case you couldn't wait to take them off?
Oh yeah, they went scrub to the wash straight away. I couldn't touch them. The lads, I'd say, ma'am, I think the ma'am had to take them off, or dad had to take them off. I'm like, just take them off me. And they took them off, and then the gloves, the plastic gloves got thrown away and scrubbed my hands.
You mentioned there as well about being stuck in your room. I want to go back to that as well.
Yeah.
That can happen run towards a toxic relationship that you had.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
So it started with a breakup. I was in a relationship, started off healthy, ended not healthy. It broke up. And when it broke up, that's when everything started to fall apart. It started in the relationship. When the relationship started getting bad, I started going to wash my hands. My sister would know that, say, if a year after having another fight, you're washing your hands again excessively. And I'd be like, no, no, I said, we're fine. My use always sugarcoat it, like, you know. And then it started. Then, as I said, we broke up. And that night, I just didn't want to be here anymore. I was like, that's it. I was like, I always was one to put my family first. And I'm really disappointed in myself, because that night I didn't put my family first. I wanted to do overdose. I wanted it. I went in, got the tablets, everything. I went into my room and I sent a picture to him saying that this is what you're after making me do. But luckily enough, he texted my sister and said, watch safe. And then Lorraine came in. Dad and Mam came into my room and I was like, no, I said, I don't want to be here anymore. I said, I don't know. I'm a horrible person. I did this. Nobody can love me. All this crack. And they said everything right. But I'm like, you have to say that you're my family, you know, that kind of a way. And then I was like, no, please just let me go. And when I said that, my dad fell to the floor and I'll never forget it. He fell to the floor in pain. And then I was like, oh, I can't do that. Like, I couldn't do that. It didn't hit me then. But when I think back this day, I told my sister, I was like, Lorraine, I hate you. I said, stop. I said, no. I said, I hate you. Just let me go. Like, and all this. I'll never forgive myself for that. She forgives me because she's great. Like, you know, and I'd forgive her if she ever said anything. I'll never forgive myself for saying it, because above all the things going, I don't think I hate anybody, not mind my family, you know? And I said that, and she still stuck by me no matter what I said to her that night. They got me into the car reluctantly. They took me to South Dock. And before I went, I begged Lorraine. I was like, I don't want to go to hospital. I'm not going to hospital or whatever. And Lorraine promised me. She's like, Steph, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And she said, and if you do, she said, we'll be there. And then she said, and if you don't go, she said, if you don't really want to go, we won't make you. You know, but we will get through this. And I was like, I'm after saying all that to her, like, and she's still, and I'm after putting my family through so much pain. The boys were there. I remember the boys being there. I can't remember anything that they said, because I knew once I said what I said to Lorraine, that was all that played in my mind. I was like, why are you saying that to a person that you love? Like, so then they put me into the car. I went to South Dock and he taught me I was after having a nervous breakdown. And I was like, yeah. And he taught me mindfulness, go to counsellors, all this. And my mum and dad brought me home that night. As I said, I didn't forgive myself. I knew I'd never do it or never even think about it again. Not saying that I wouldn't even think about it again, because you can't control your own brain, but I knew I'd never do it because I could never put my family through that much pain. And at the end of the day, no matter how bad I'm feeling, I couldn't put it on my family. As I said, not just saying that, I was like, no matter, I don't, even with my OCD, I didn't care how much pain I was enduring on myself once it wasn't going in my family, but it was going in my family, like, you know. So yeah, that really set things off. Then I started to confine myself to the room. I used video chat, the lads from outside the room, they could be in the hall. Sorry, I confined myself to the kitchen first. I was in the kitchen because I couldn't go into the sitting room because everybody was in the sitting room. Stayed in the kitchen while the lads were in the sitting room. You just kill them because they're like, we're all as a family. Anybody that comes into the house, there's six of us around the table. Like, you don't get any one person around the table. It's the whole lot of us around the table. And then, yeah, then I slowly actually started isolating myself and coming back and putting myself into my room. So to a point that I was inside my room and I was video chatting the lads from outside the door. Couldn't come out. Could come out at night time when all the lads were inside the kitchen or inside the sitting room. Would go down for my shower, come back up. And yeah, if I tip something, if I even walk past something, we'd have to cover everything, like with clean sheets. So just say if there was, I don't know, if there was a box in the hall, just say I'd have to cover that, because what was the volume of people walking up and down the hall all day, even though it could have been all my own family. But I'm like, they could have been here, they could have been there, they could have been anywhere, like, you know. And they used, mam used cover. I started off by covering it, but I kind of went over the top, so mam couldn't keep up with the washing, so she was like, I'll cover them for you, she said, Steph, while you were in the shower. Mam blames herself, and I think she's wrong, because, and dead a bit as well, because they say they enabled me. They did, right? But they did what any parent would have done at the time.
Yeah,
I don't begrudge them first. I think I'm delighted that they did it, to be honest with you. I do think there'd been probably a whole lot more fights, and we probably would have ended up falling out if they didn't do it, because as I said, if I was a parent, I'd have done anything. You do anything to make your child happy, you know? And that's what they did. As I said, mam, I hope she forgives herself, because I don't hold it against her. Nobody holds it against her. Which she always said after that first counselling session with my counsellor, she said that if we didn't enable her, but as I said, she did nothing wrong. I'd have done the exact same if I had a child. If she was going through it, I'd have done the exact same for her to keep her happy. So yeah, then as I said, I started confining myself to the room. If I touched anything or if I even walked past something I thought was not covered, I'd have to stay up all night. I used to stay up all night constantly. I'd have my computer in my room and my chair, and I'd stay up all night. And then because the shower is on an ensuite off my mum and dad's room, so I knew that if I'd go back down for a shower, they'd be awake half the night still, like, you know, listening to the shower or whatever. So I was like, no, I can't do that to them. So I'd have to wait till the next morning to go to the shower, or else I'd just stay awake the whole next day and get on with it. And now anybody that knows me knows I love my sleep. So there's something really big had to stop me of going to sleep, like, you know. And then one night I remember coming up, my dad always mentions it to me, because he said that was really when you were rock bottom. And I came up and from the shower, and I was after taking off my dressing gown, and then I remember I was like, I'm still dirty. I don't know what I passed, don't know what I touched. I didn't, mightn't even have touched anything. Maybe it was that I wasn't long enough in the shower. I could spend 2 hours in the shower scrubbing myself. And I was like, maybe I didn't sanitize enough. I don't know. But I remember I had nothing on basically, and I was standing in one spot in my room, and I could not move from that spot for the whole night. I stayed there. I stood there the whole night. I couldn't leave until I went for a shower the next day. Did not want to go down for a shower that night because mum and dad, like, they were wrecked. They want to go to bed as well. Not that they'd have stopped me. I just didn't want to do it on them. And I felt that this is my room. This is my safe place. This is my clean place. If I go down or if I move out of this spot, I'm going to contaminate whatever dirt I thought was on me, everything else in the room, and I'll never be able to come into my room again. That was basically what I thought.
Did you, were you standing for the whole night? Yeah. Didn't you sit down?
No, stood the whole night long. Yeah. Yeah. And then I went for, I'm nearly certain, yeah, I think I went for a shower. It was at 9 o'clock that morning or something. Mum and Dad were up, as I said. They knew that I was sending, but I did not want, they couldn't come into my room, so they couldn't comfort me. You know, like as I said, when your child is upset, all you want to do is give them a hug. I have the kids inside in school, like, you know, as I said, they're not even my kids, but if they're upset, anything, all your natural instinct is to do is give them a hug, like, you know. So I can't imagine how difficult it was for mum and dad to stand outside that door and knowing that they can't even give their child a hug. Deep down, I wanted to give them a hug as well, but I knew that I can't because I contaminate them. But yeah, I stood for the whole night. And then, as I said, 9 o'clock that morning, I went and I had my shower, and then I was able to, I wouldn't say relax. I don't think I was ever fully relaxed with my OCD. I laugh about it because I say I was comfortable in my room and that I was comfortable because it was my clean place. I wasn't. I hate being on my own. I hate anybody that knows me, even if the lads, if they have to go back to the shop or anything, and if I'm in the I'm in the house on my own, I hate it. You know, I hate it. My sister, she loves her own company. She'd go off and she'd be in her own. Some people are like that. Some people. So then my counsellor said something to me one day, and she was like, Steph, she said, you were comfortable in your room. And I was like, yeah, I was very comfortable. And next thing she goes, no, you weren't. She said, because she said, are you comfortable being on your own? And I was like, no. And now when I look back on it, to think if I had to go back into my room again, I don't think I'd manage it. Hope to God the day never comes.
And are you still in that same room at home?
Still in the same room. Yeah.
And do you have a different kind of outlook on the room?
I have. I still think it is as my safe place and my clean place. I can't really go into my bed still. I definitely can't go into my bed if I haven't a shower taken that night. My pyjamas, I used to change my pyjamas. Like I could come up, I used to take off my dress, go and put on my pyjamas. And if I decided that, oh no, that kind of tipped off something, could be the wardrobe. Like I used to sanitize all my wardrobe and everything before I used to go down to the shower. But I'd be like, if that tipped off my wardrobe now, so take off the whole lot again and put on a new set of pyjamas. Like, I swear, the pile of washing that was there, and mum used to do all the washing, like, and she couldn't. And see, that's why I think the enabling, she thinks that, because my counsellor said to me that you were doing the washing, but if the washing wasn't there, she wouldn't have been able to change her pyjamas that many times. I'd have found a way around it, to be quite honest with you.
Were you also one for eating? What would you do for meals?
So eating, my mum used, so at the start I was eating in the kitchen. I used to be able to touch the milk, any of the packages for tea or anything like that. So then my mum used to bring me in food into my room. So I'd have to make sure that she was after changing her clothes and everything. And any time that she wasn't after changing her clothes, she used to literally hand it through the door, and I used to go up to my desk and eat inside there. But then, you know, as I said, I was always thinking of my family. But there was a cousin's wedding coming up, and mum and dad were invited to it. I think it was during COVID, actually. It was during COVID because we weren't invited to it. Even though they were first cousins, we'd all be very close. All my cousins are very close. So we weren't invited. And mum and dad, I was like, they need a break. Like, you know, they haven't got a break. They're in their 60s. I was like, and their daughter is in their 30s. They should be enjoying life now, not having to worry about the kids that have grown up, like, you know, that kind of a way. So I was like, no, I was like, you can go. And next thing they were like, no, we're not going because how will you manage or whatever? And I was like, no, you're going. I was like, go. So I said, you know what you do now? I said, you give me my lunch, get it all packed up or whatever. And I said, I'll have it in the lunch box and I'll have all the boxes. I said, give me enough food. I said, I'll be fine. I said, they had 3 or 4 flasks filled, so it had been hydrated enough. And I said, I'll be fine. And I said, if all comes to all, I said, I'll ask one of the lads for something. I wouldn't have asked one of the lads for something because I never thought of him, not clean enough, like, but my mam is meticulous, like, you know. So she was kind of one that I trusted, and I think that's why it all kind of fell on her, you know, for the cleanliness and all that and covering the sheets. I think it all fell on her because I know that she's clean. All the lads are clean at home, like, you know, but yeah, that's why I felt. So I said to him, I was like, no, go. And I said, and they said, will you promise to go for a shower? And I said, look, I mightn't go for a shower. I said, because they knew that if I didn't go for a shower, I wouldn't go to bed that night. And I said, look, I mightn't go for a shower because I said, if the lads are down the hall and everything, I said, the hall won't be clean enough for me. And next thing they said, no, we won't go. And then I goes, do you know what? I said, I will. I said, I think I'm able for it. I said, I'll go down to the shower that night. I said, Lorraine, as I said, Lorraine, will you clean the shower or whatever? And she said, yeah. So I was like, right. I had no intention of going for a shower that night but I was like, if I didn't say that, they weren't going to go. So I was like, yeah. So, but as I said, had the food, had the dinner, everything. The lads were outside. They'd give a knock on the door to know was everything all right. I'd be like, yeah, grand. I'm on my computer. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And then I remember Lorraine coming in and like she snapped me and she was like, "Steph, I haven't seen you all day. Are you all right? Like, are you alive or whatever?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And then I video chatted her, and from inside my room, and they were outside in the sitting room, and sure, they were delighted. Not saying delighted with life, they were happy. But I knew that they weren't still happy because they were still missing Steph's presence in the room. Even though I was only in my room, like Lorraine could go back to her room, like, you know, and be fine because you'd still come out in and out, you know, that kind of way. I wasn't out for the whole day. Didn't come out. Going to the toilet was a struggle because I had to go down the hall. But as I said, I'd have on my pyjamas and I'd take off them pyjamas when I would go down to the toilet and put on a brand new set when I came up. And then I kind of had a brainwave and I was like, I can't actually cope if anything happened my mum and dad. Any of my family, but my mum and dad especially, I was like, they're doing everything for me. I was like, it's their independence. I said, I'm putting all my independence on them. And I was like, I actually can't cope if anything happens to them. And I was like, and like that, as I said, I was saying that they're at the stage of life where they should be enjoying it. They should be going off every weekend, you know, to a different place and all this, and they should be enjoying life. And then I was like, do you know what? No. And that's when I went out to different places. OCD Ireland, every place I reached out to, anything that I could think of, I Googled it and I emailed them. A lot of places didn't email me back. Some places emailed me back saying, go and get counselling, as if I wasn't trying it already. Do you know that kind of way? And then my mum swears by the radio. Anything, if she's any problem, C103, she puts it on and she texts in. It's a Patricia Messenger and she texts her in anyway. And I was like, I'm not one for the radio. Like, you know, and I wouldn't, like, I'd listen to the radio, but I wouldn't be one to text it in or anything like that. So then I was like, you know what? I'm going to send an email to the radio station. And I said, sure, you can do no harm. So I said, I'd send it. And I explained my situation, but I remained anonymous because I didn't want anybody to know that this one is at home and she's stuck inside her room, like, you know, whatever. So I emailed in the radio station and they emailed me back and they said that we'll speak about it, just say on a Tuesday or whatever. And I said, perfect, thanks. So I was listening in on a Tuesday, told nobody about it, didn't tell mam, dad, nobody. So my aunt was in a nursing home over in Kildallery and I was like, they're after telling me now that they're going to be reading this out. And mam listens to C103 religiously. So I was like, she's going to have this on in the car and she's going to be on her way home from visiting my aunt. And I was like, she's going to hear this. And I was like, maybe she won't know. Like, knowing damn well, she would know. And then they read it out. And sure, mam says to me that she was like, Sif, I knew it was you. Like, she knocked at the door when she came home and she was like, Sif, are you all right? And I was like, yeah. And she said that, did you text in the radio? And I goes, yeah, why did they read out my name? Knowing that they didn't, like, you know, yeah. And next thing she was there and she was like, no, but she said, and then I goes, did anybody send in anything? And next thing I was listening to it. Somebody messaged in, look, cognitive behavioural therapy. I did that, right? Mm-hmm. I did it during COVID. Nothing against it, but I was on a Zoom call with a lady in COVID, right? And she was telling me to do this, to do that. I did it. But the minute I was hung up the phone, I was down for a shower. I was sanitizing my hands. I was doing the exact same thing again. So I was like, I tried that. That's not going to work. And then they text in EMDR. I found this very good or whatever. And I was like, I haven't a clue what EMDR is. To this day, I don't. It's eye movement, rapid something, right? And mam came home and that night she was on Google and she typed in EMDR and Alison Copark came up. She's in Adair. And mam said to me, Sif, will you go to this lady? I was attending counsellors before. I had this one fella. He was very, very good for my anxiety and my depression. He couldn't just grasp my OCD. Nothing wrong with his counselling. It just wasn't working for me. He took me so far. And as I said, he was very good for my anxiety and depression. He really made me, he was probably one of the people that kind of made me forgive myself with my nana as well. Yeah. So he took me so far, but I was like, no, I'm going back here now and nothing is happening with my OCD. And then, as I said, Alison Cowper, mam said, Sif, will you try Alison? And then I goes, yeah. I said, mam, look, sure, I have nothing to lose. I said, I'll give her a shot anyway. I was willing to give everyone a go. And then I said, yeah, look, mam, I'll give her a shot. I said, where is she? And she was like, oh, Adair. The day came and mam said, come on, we'll go. And we made the appointment. She was fully booked up. And she said, she squeezed me in. And I went to her and told her my story. And the minute I had anything out of my mouth, basically when she hardly heard that I was stuck in my room, she was like I can say it now because she knows she'd laugh at it, like a little Rottweiler over in the corner, like, you know, and she was giving it to me and I was there and I was like, you have no idea who I am, like, you know, and Mam is such a calm person, like, and Mam was like, Steph, just listen to her, just listen, and Mam doesn't like a voice has been raised or anything like that. And I ended up exploding. I was like, no, I was like, if you, like I said, you know, you don't know me, you don't know nothing about me. I said, you don't know anything I've been through in life. So, and then she goes, I think I said that you haven't been through any of this. And she turned back and she goes, how do you know? So I didn't know her backstory. So I shouldn't have said that, like, you know, but she said something to me. She said that you're not willing to put in the work, Steph. And I was like, I have tried to put in the work all my life. Like, college was a chore trying to get to college, you know, as I said, but I did it. Like, you know, she never knew any of that. And I said, you know what? I said, we're not going to work. And I walked out the door and Mam, I was like, Mam's going to come with me. Mam always came with me. Mam never came with me that day. And I went out to the car and it was freezing cold and I banged the doors and everything. And next time I went out to the car, and when I got out to the car, the door was locked. And I was like, how long am I going to be able to stand outside here for? And I was like, Mam is surely going to come out. And no, Mam wasn't coming out. So then I rang the doorbell and the receptionist opened. And she goes, you can go straight in. And then I was like, oh, thanks. I said, and next thing, the minute I came back in, she goes, I knew you would be back. And I goes, I'm not back for you. I said, I'm back for my keys. I said, Mam, can I have the keys to the car? I said, we're going. I said, I'm not staying. And Mam said, Steph, will you just listen to what she has to say? So I was like, Mam, no. I said, I have enough of it. I said, I'm not here for this. I said, I'm here to get help, not to be told I'm not willing to put in the work. She was still going in the corner. So I sat down and listen to her. I have no idea what she said, to be quite honest with you, because I was literally just sitting there for my mam's sake. And dinner went away and I was in a foul mood and Mam was trying to keep peace or whatever. And she was like, Steph, will you go back to her? And I goes, I have no intention in the world of going back to her, Mam. I said, no. I said, that's it. Do you know, to be honest with you, it felt like the last resort. I was like, no. I said, this is it. I said, I'm screwed. Like, I was like, but I was so, she'll say to this day that you're so stubborn, Steph. I went home that day. I stopped sanitizing. I stopped washing my hands. The courier would come and I'd be thinking, oh, how many places has he been? I couldn't go shopping in a shop. So I used to order stuff offline, but I couldn't open the packages or anything like that. I went home that day. I opened all the packages. Wow. And then Mam was like, go back to her now, Steph, and tell her. And I was like, no, Mam. I said, I'm not going back to her. I said, it's the last thing I do. I said, I'm not going back to her. And next thing, Mam was like, Steph, will you please go back? And I was like, Mam, I'm not. And she goes, would you not feel good going back telling her what you have done? And I was like, no. I said, I really don't care if she knows or not. And next thing I was like, do you know what? I was like, my family have been through the ringer as well with this, because it's not just me that was going through it. My family was going through it. And I was like, do you know what? I said, I will. And I went back. And the minute I went inside the door and I told her, she goes, well done. And she goes, Steph, can I just tell you something? And then I goes, yeah. And next thing she goes, I wasn't talking to the real Steph that day. She said, I'm going to meet the real Steph now. And then I goes, all right. And next thing she goes, I wasn't talking to the real Steph that day. She said, I was talking to OCD Steph. And she goes, it was making every excuse in the world, like, oh, poor me, poor this, I have to go through this and through that. She said, not that you haven't gone through it, but she said, that was all making excuses. And if I didn't be so hard on you that day, it wouldn't have worked. And it wouldn't have.
So true. The confrontation helped.
Yeah. She was the first person that stood up to it. And now looking back, I'm like, with the intrusive thoughts, I was like, I stood up to it on my graduation day, do you know? Mm. And that's why it backed off. And that's why when Alison stood up to my OCD and when I eventually stood up to my OCD, that's when it started to back off a bit. I'm not saying it backed off overnight. As I said, I went home probably the next day and used sanitizer, but not to the extent. I used to sanitize my hair, I used to sanitize my face. As I said, I used to put it on my lips. Anywhere I could, I'd put it. I used to go through bottles of sanitizer, bottles of shampoo, like everything. But yeah, she said she saved my life, basically. No, we joke about it till this day because we'll always say, like, you know, I would classify her now as a good friend. She's always at the other side of the phone. Some counsellors, you know, when your session is over, you're out the door and that's it. Like, not saying that they don't think about you, but like, I don't know that they ever, I don't even know how to explain it, but Alison, anytime, day or night, I can text Alison. Even if I come out from here, right, and just say if I'm riddled with anxiety, I can text her and she'll calm me down straight away by just saying, Steph, cop on. Now, as I said, she mightn't work for everybody. She worked for me. And, you know, counsellors are like medication.
Yeah.
They don't work for everybody. You have to, but my main thing even today is don't stop at one counsellor. If I stopped at one counsellor, I'd still be in my room. I always say to this day, I have a bully inside my head, which is OCD. And she was the first person to stand up to the bully. And my sister, she has told me all of this. But my initial reaction to her is, Lorraine, you haven't been through it. You don't know what it's like and all this. Mm. I don't know Alison's background. I don't know what she's been through in life. I don't, for all I know, she could have been inside her room herself. Do you know that kind of way? And that's kind of, as I said, not that Lorraine didn't help me. Lorraine is the best in the world. And she got me through, like, she'd make a great counsellor. And she got me through it all with half the expense. And, I was like, Lorraine, I know you. I know your background. I was like, you don't know what I'm going through, basically. She knew. They went through it all with me. They know exactly.
Your family's amazing. Your family's, what's your mom's name?
Kay. Kay. Yeah.
She the woman in your WhatsApp picture?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was, oh my gosh, she looks like such a lovely woman.
Oh, she's a pet.
Oh, she really does. What's the name of your Instagram page? OCD You Thought You Beat Me, is it?
OCD You Thought You Beat Me, yeah.
In case anyone wants to follow you.
I was like, you know, you never actually, you say about the person going through the OCD or any mental health, that they're going through so much. The families go through the ringer.
100%. And your family, like, they never give up and you're never willing to give up.
None of them. Even as I said, my cousin, like, or my uncle or anything, they never give up on me, no matter how much I push them away. Like, stopped them coming into the house. I pushed them away. My sister, my brothers, everything. Lorraine, she cut back on friends, like, you know, because she lost friends because of me, like, you know. I pushed everybody away and my family never, matter how much.
Wouldn't you do the same for them? You would.
I would. I'd hate to see them go through pain, like, you know, but yeah, you would. I suppose that's family at the end of the day.
So you're so empathetic as well. Before we finish up, do the questions. When you were saying about emailing in C103, Patricia Messenger, I personally know her. Wonderful lady. It would have been JP probably that was emailing you back.
Yeah.
JP McNamara.
Yeah.
So I think Patricia actually listens to the podcast. So I hope she hears. Be telling her anyway. Wonderful lady.
Yeah.
And radio stations like that at times, like, there can be the answer. I didn't even know my time working in radio before. Yeah. You'd email a radio station before you'd email your friend or text your friend.
Yeah, it's such the wide listeners, you know, the wide variety. Like, and that's what I was trying to, I was like, there's surely somebody. I knew there was more people going through it, but as I said, I felt alone. And then I was like, definitely somebody's going to be reading the radio or listening to the radio and saying, right, no, I did this or I did that. There has to have been somebody out there recovering from it.
And like this podcast now, I bet you there'll be someone listening in a similar scenario, thinking they're alone. And the whole goal of this pod is just so people don't feel alone and to identify. And if they want to reach out, I've mentioned your Instagram name as well.
Yeah.
Steph, you've been absolutely incredible. Brenda. I could talk to you for you for hours. You're a beautiful, beautiful soul. And so empathetic. I always say someone who's empathetic, they've gone through a lot. You don't have empathy unless you've suffered yourself.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely fantastic. First question for you.
Yeah.
If you could go back to your lowest moment and whisper one truth to yourself, what would it be?
You will get out the other side. You are stronger. I didn't fully believe that I was strong as I am. Still, I have trouble trying to say it out loud. But no matter how dark it is, you will pull through. You are stronger than you think.
Number two, what did rock bottom teach you that success never could?
Basically the same thing, that you are stronger than you think, that you'll get through whatever life throws at you. At life, you will. Don't ever sit back, keep pushing.
And finally, the last one, what's one message you'd give someone who feels like they're never going to make it out?
My main message is there is people going out there at the, like, they're really rock bottom. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Don't stop. As I said, I mentioned it a while ago, that counsellors, don't stop at one counsellor, keep going. All counsellors aren't going to work for you, no matter if you've to go through 20 of them. My main thing is to keep going and going and going, even if it's only for one session. Just keep going and take each day at a time. And even not each day, each hour. I take each hour at a time. You know, your mood can change so much during the day, and don't write off any one day because of a bad hour. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steph, you have been incredible. You really have. I'm so glad you did this, and you're going to help so many people. You really will.
Thanks, Brenda. And thank you. It was such an easy podcast talking to you. It was like talking to a friend for years.
And you made it easy too. So do hello in us.
Yeah.
The country. You've been brilliant. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brenda.
This podcast is sponsored by Pharma Plus, evidence-based nutrition created by pharmacists with over 20 years' experience. They make supplements simple and effective. Check them out at pharmaplus.ie or on Instagram at Pharma Plus Ireland.